Welcome one and all to the Damage Report. I'm John Iderola. It's a Friday, and if you've come expecting excellence, you've come to the wrong place. Yeah. Anyway, that was Brett and I were talking before the show. Hey Brett, how's it going? Welcome back to the show, buddy.
I'm so happy to be here, John. It's blue background day. Why? I don't know.
Your hair looks very blue.
My hair is, well, you can see my halo, John. That's what you can see.
Your halo.
Have I been learning halo. All the new Beyonce songs on guitar? Yes.
I don't think that's.
Is there a tornado in my city?
I mean, yes. If I know that Beyonce song, it is not a new song.
Oh my God, it's so good.
And do I know it because they had an amazing rendition of it on Glee? Yes. Anyway, we've got a lot of news to talk about today, everyone. There's a lot going on and has been going on throughout the week that, despite our best efforts to keep up with, we have failed as a channel. There's been some legal updates for Donnie Boy. They have not gone his way. So we're going to be catching you up on those, as well as the continued developments in the quest to choose a VP. Who's going to get hung next? We may know, actually. We have been tracking the stock price of Truth Social, or the media company that controls it, throughout the week. And there's been some developments in that area as well. And then feuds and people getting drunk. And I'm not even talking about the person you think I am based on headline news from this morning. There's a lot going on. And that's just in the first hour. Coming up in the aftermath, we've got garbage people and Kid Rock. Maybe a good guy. We'll see. But anyway, Brett, it's great to have you here. Would you like to talk about some news, buddy?
I am so excited to talk about news. You have no idea, John.
I don't understand it. But then my dog woke me up about 15 times throughout the night. And I know that you don't care about that, but it's important to me. Anyway, with that said, why don't we talk about some news? Donald Trump has been hit 3 separate times just this week in the various legal challenges that he faces. And here's what you need to know about all that. And I want to start with the most exciting one. I'm not going to drag it out. This is one that I thought was going to go the other way. And thankfully, it did not. So just since yesterday's show, the judge overseeing the classified documents case has rejected Donald Trump's legal team's bid to dismiss the case based on their misinterpretation of the Presidential Records Act. So the charges that he sought to dismiss, according to Judge Eileen Cannon, quote, make no reference to the Presidential Records Act, nor do they rely on that statute for purposes of stating an offense. As such, the PRA, quote, does not provide a pretrial basis to dismiss. And so look, that's a good point. The charges against him have nothing to do with the Presidential Records Act. It's all encapsulated within the Espionage Act. I do notice, though, that she says it doesn't provide a pretrial basis to dismiss. Now, it should not provide a trial basis to dismiss either, because again, he's not being charged under it, and they have no idea what the Presidential Records Act actually does. But that said, while she has not done what I feared earlier in the week that she would, which is provide this easy out based on a legal theory that the Trump legal team wishes applied, that doesn't mean that it won't pop up again. And the reason that I was surprised was that last month, Cannon had asked both the prosecution as well as the defense to prepare potential jury instructions that would take the Presidential Records Act into account. Special Counsel Jack Smith's team wrote in a court filing on Tuesday that Cannon's request was based on a quote, fundamentally flawed legal premise, which is, that's harsh words against the judge. And she apparently had some harsh words against him as well. Take a look at this.
It's interesting, in her decision today on the motion to dismiss, she did punch back a little bit at the special counsel, and she insisted that their request that they get a clarity on this issue of jury instructions before the trial starts, because they've said, look, if you're going to put this issue in the trial, if you're going to allow this in, we're probably going to appeal. She said that their demand was, quote, unprecedented and unjust.
And unjust. Well, anyway, so he didn't get what he wanted on that. Now, we are going to update you on some of the other cases, but Brett, wanted to give you a chance to jump in. What do you make of that? It's not going to be a PRA thing.
Oh, that's great. And it wasn't going to be. And not, Trump's group didn't really even mention the PRA in their, argument why it should be dismissed. This is just the time to think about the process itself. This is the time when they try to get the whole thing thrown out before it can start. And it's a lot of why not arguments. Take a swing. Why not? Why don't we make this argument that this is the dumbest thing ever made? And then your argument as to why the other team's argument sucks has to inherently say that their premise is fundamentally flawed. And Another thing you need to think about is judges are people humans. And a lot of times they're people humans that aren't necessarily the best legal minds or lawyers in the world, but they're the ones who seem to be most crucial to an overarching judge placement process and strategy by one party or another. Mm-hmm. And that plays out when you hear, oh, this is one of Trump's judges. These are conservative judges. These are, you know, we put them in robes so that they seem like floating heads that don't care about anything other than reason. And we put them in big daises so they loom large over everyone, but they're just people. And so sometimes they do have fundamentally flawed legal premises, and you kind of have to walk that line of not insulting them, but pointing out that doesn't work, Your Honor. And sometimes really smart legal minds that are judges ask you questions that they know the answers to, but they want to see if you know the answers to them. So
sure. Yeah, and this might have been a case of that. It's just that when it's Eileen Cannon, like a fear creeps up. Yeah. And the thing is, I'm glad that you point out, like we throw around terms like Trump appointed, Biden appointed. And I think that a lot of people use that as like a get out of jail free card. It's like, oh, they were appointed by this person, so obviously they're biased. But no, but it's not obvious. It doesn't mean that they're always biased. And not even just for judges, like the special counsel that investigated Biden. I talked about this earlier this week. Her, you know, he took a couple cheap shots, but he didn't like just try to take down Biden just because he happened to have, you know, been a Republican or whatever. It's that in the case of Eileen Cannon, she has given us reason to fear that she is biased. Not just because of what she's done, but because of what she hasn't done, which is much of anything, which is delaying the trial. And so that's why people are afraid. And so on the other side, when they throw around, you know, that like the AG is a Democrat or something, so that's why they're going after Biden. It's not that and evidence, it's just they're a Democrat. It's shorthand. I don't need to prove the case. With Eileen Cannon, we're not simply telling you that Trump put her there. We're describing all the things she's done step by step over the course of months that have made us suspicious about her lack of impartiality. And to that end, we still don't know exactly when this trial is going to happen. It was originally scheduled to begin in May, but a delay is expected. Smith has proposed a July 8th start date, but Cannon has yet to set a new date. And even following this ruling, we still don't know. So it still may not actually happen, certainly not before the election. Now, the other developments, and Brett, I want your commentary on this. In a separate case over in Georgia, they had attempted to get that one thrown out, not because of the Presidential Records Act, but because of the First Amendment. The idea being that you can try to persuade a Secretary of State to conjure votes out of thin air. You can tell people to act as fake electors, and all of that is just free speech, man. We got free speech, it's the First Amendment. And the judge is like, no, that's crazy. And by the way, that judge, correct me if I'm wrong, is a Republican. And again, doing the right thing here. Just the fact that they were put there by the other party does not mean that they're biased. And then finally, and this I believe was Wednesday, the judge in the New York hush money trial has rejected an effort to delay. So he tried to kill classified documents. He tried to kill the RICO case in Georgia, and he tried to delay the hush money trial. And that's three strikes, which according to my quick Googling that's bad, Brett. He's out.
No, that's not. That's not how it works.
No,
you can't. Three strikes is baseball, John.
Oh, well,
it's a stick game.
Three failures in any event. It's a three count. To put it in wrestling terms.
Anyway. It's a three count. I like to think here's the thing when they keep delaying. I like that they're not delaying some of these things, and they might actually happen. And I want that to be a precedent, because all the people who complain about our current legal system, they're like, don't I have a right to a speedy trial? And what's funny about this, I don't really think that when like Trump's defense goes home at night in an era when they're delaying some of these trials, I think they're like, listen, that just means I have to do more work that at the end of the trial, he's not gonna pay me for.
That's true. I love that though, that like generally, yeah, it's like, I have a right to a speedy trial, where Trump is like, do I have a right to like a trial that's slow AF?
He wants to delay as much as possible. He doesn't want any of these things for two reasons. One, if the trial's going on at all while he's running for president, as much as he complains, as much as Bill Maher's asking questions like, Piers Morgan's asking questions like, why do you keep attacking him if he seems to say it helps him? Well, it doesn't actually help him to have these things go on. Like the idea of COVID being bad was just a general drain on this guy's popularity. Whatever he did, even if he handled it great, it would be a drain on his popularity. Being an incumbent does that. He wants Biden to be the only one who is suffering from incumbent fatigue. In these situations, he's going to hate if any of these trials are happening, period. And so he wants to delay them until after he becomes president, because then he can say he does have immunity and he'd pardon himself in any case where he's allowed to.
Yeah, which is at least several of them.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you pointed out the Piers Morgan thing. Like, what a name. And look, he's not saying that that's how he views politics.
Correct.
But to assume that others do implies that you don't think it's super weird to view politics that way. Because I care about whether he broke the law, and I want to know. Even if I knew that doing it would massively help him in the election, I feel like the law matters and I feel like we deserve to know. I don't just view things through a nakedly partisan lens.
Yeah, I agree that that was just a British, that's just how British people on TV ask questions. They're like, this is the opposite of your position, defend it.
Exactly. Yeah,
but,
that's fun.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Here's what we both know, that Donald Trump led this nation to the best 4 years economically in my lifetime. We had the lowest unemployment for African Americans, for Hispanics. We had the lowest for Asians, a 70-year low for women.
I agree with Tim Scott in that last bit. Following Donald Trump's tenure as president, women are in some ways at a 70-year low in terms of their bodily autonomy, things like that. Here's the issue for Tim Scott there. You notice he was talking in the past tense about the unemployment, though. We had the lowest blah, 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 blah. He leaves off the latter part of 2020 where there was a little bit more unemployment than he'd like to acknowledge. He also ignores the fact that now unemployment is lower than it was at any point in general during the Trump term. So if that was your reason for supporting Donald Trump, I mean, feel free to come aboard with us because we're doing even better in that area. But anyway, that is Tim Scott speaking out in support of Donald Trump. Now, he might just be doing that as a surrogate, but I think a lot of people suspect that the reason that he's barnstorming the media is because he wants to be VP. And nobody's super surprised by that. You might, though, be surprised that he might be leading in that area. So according to reporting from News Nation, Republican insiders have said that Tim Scott is like currently the lead in the Trump camp to be VP. So they do note that Trump is notoriously mercurial, which I think is a character from Shakespeare, and could change his mind. But as of now, this is the plan, according to those stories. I just said that to bother Brett.
I see says, Queen MAGA hath been with you. There you go. Continue.
You know, when I think about getting into that voting booth and voting, I bite my thumb. But anyway.
I bite my thumb at you, sir.
100%. It was shorthand, man. I'm trying to update it for the modern audience. Anyway, so they say, here's why. With Scott as the VP, the Republican Party will be able to play the Biden in chains clip over and over and over and further weaken Biden's popularity with the African-American community. So that is an interesting strategy. You might be thinking, what is the Biden in chains clip? Well, it's from way back in 2012, and here it is.
Romney wants to let he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put you all back in chains.
I mean, should he have said that? Biden shouldn't have said most of the things that he said, certainly not the way that he says them, but that's the best thing you've got on Joe Biden? I feel like he's said worse things than that. Even in the area of being like racially insensitive, I feel like he's said worse things than that. And by the way, you can play that even if you don't have Tim Scott as your VP. You could just play damaging clips. We do it here at the Damage Report all the time, and Tim Scott never returns my calls. But anyway, Brett, I do want your thoughts about this because there's a long list of potential VP picks. And I have some ideas as to why Tim Scott might not be the worst guy to choose, but really?
Here's the thing.
That just seems so unlike Trump.
Listen, when people on the left recast a white character as a black character, they cry woke and get all mad and say they're gonna boycott. Republican vice president, as a conservative white, I'm just saying that traditionally, if you look at the previous versions of this movie, They were all white, like the Little Mermaid. They were always white, like Snow White's dwarves. And now they're going to make them black? What the heck? What the heck, Republicans? You go woke, you go broke. Mm-hmm. That's why it is actually more moral to continue to only have white leaders for the rest of time. This is the logic that the Republicans pretend they care about, but obviously don't. It's always a ploy. It's always a sham. And this is a hilarious iteration of it.
I think that if you practice that sort of monologue and grow your beard out a little bit more, you could get a show at the Daily Wire.
Can't wait.
I think you do.
I'm already in Bill, what's his Walsh? Matt Walsh plaid.
And Matt Walsh plaid. He should have like, I don't know, a stand at like Gap or Banana Republic to sell those. But anyway, so it really did feel like he has to go for one of the insane Republican women, right? Kristi Noem or Marjorie Greene or Carrie Lake or Katie Britt or something. I think Katie Britt really did some damage to herself with that State of the Union thing, but it really did seem like he'd go in that direction. Now, that does not mean that it's a horrible idea to have someone like Tim Scott. I will make the partial case. I agree with them. It could help him amongst African-American men. And that does seem to be a demographic that they want to chip away at, and polling indicates it might be possible. Now, the idea of if he were to have like a Carrie Lake, that would theoretically be to help him with like suburban women voters. And that, I don't know, demographically might help him in different states. You know, they're playing with all these numbers. But beyond just that, I do think that Tim Scott, I don't agree with on a lot. But he doesn't seem like he wants to march me to a wall and gun me down with an AR-15. And I appreciate that. He doesn't seem like he wants blood in the way that a lot of these other Republicans do. And like next to Trump, it's like almost like a humanizing thing. Am I wrong? Am I missing things about Tim Scott? He just seems kind of like non-threatening in a way that many of the other possible choices don't.
And that's what a vice president is.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's
like Marjorie Greene.
I remember all these idiots who were like, oh, no, you know, you don't need that. You don't need her as vice president. Mm-hmm. And people would definitely, I get what you mean. People, if Marjorie Taylor Greene's your vice presidential candidate, you're done. There's no way. People would be like, she's insane. You've got an insane person on the ticket. He knew instinctively to counterbalance himself with a Mike Pence. Like if you cook milk at a certain temperature, one of the clumps emerges as Mike Pence. Like that is who he made his vice president. And there's a certain bit of Mike Pence in Tim Scott, rumors notwithstanding. So like, I think that there is that energy to him. But I think that, you know, Tim Scott is exactly what you want a vice president. All those people who are out there saying like, oh, Ron DeSantis, he's gonna make him vice president. No, they never pick someone who can rival them. They always pick someone who's just not quite as charismatic.
Sure. And look, I get what you're saying. And he does sort of fit kind of the mold of the Mike Pence or whatever, even the religious angle. But I honestly think, and again, it's possible there are things in Tim Scott's, you know, past or background or whatever that I'm missing. He seems, I think, even less like threateningly religiously radical than Mike Pence. Dude. Like Mike Pence had all the AIDS stuff in his past and some of his policies were so needlessly aggressive. And I think Tim Scott has avoided some of that. So I think Tim Scott is not just a stand-in for Mike Pence. I think he's better at doing the Mike Pence thing than Mike Pence was.
If Tim Scott was I'm with you on that 100%. But if Tim Scott was a Democrat, Tim Scott was appointed to this position.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a DEI, essentially,
throwing a lot of bombs today.
Just think about all the Republican arguments against Tim Scott. And then they're going to do all the stuff that they get mad at people for. Now, I don't think that those things, when they're done by anyone, typically are bad. I don't think it's bad to just be like, I don't know, let's try a new way to tell this story in Hollywood and just explore the artistic merits of coming at it with a different racial casting or setting than a traditional one. But in these scenarios, all the Republicans always say this is bad. If they end up picking Tim Scott, it is the biggest hypocrisy based on their warped logic. But as we've, as John, as someone who focuses so much on values and whether they're consistent or whether someone's, you know, looking through things in that lens to see if they're just being opportunistic and shady and grifty, this is opportunistic, shady and grifty. We all know it.
Yeah.
And just the last thing I'll say is they're going to play the Biden in chains clip. Are we not going to play the My African American clip from Donald Trump when they cast Tim Scott in this role? Or we probably won't because it's terrible and crappy, but I can be the idiot who points out the obvious hypocrisy.
It'll be on Twitter in any event. He gave a speech at an organization of black businessmen, and I don't remember what he said. It was something about lightning in his eyes, and I don't remember it being good. Anyway, I have a feeling there will be some mashups. Don't worry about that.
You can barbecue faster with laser beams.
That version of Halo was amazing. It was a mashup of Halo and Walking on Sunshine, I think it was. And not only was it amazing, and Lea Michele killed it, they all did. Also, I think that was when I kind of got hooked on the show, actually. The first mashups episode. It was good. And you know that it was good. Don't say that it's not. It was.
For those listening to the podcast, John is talking about the show Glee again.
Okay, I'll talk about politics instead. Let's start with this.
A business question about Truth Social. You've seen this stock on the move in this, I'll call it remarkable, maybe even crazy way.
I could say two words, GameStop.
GameStop, that's what you think is going on here?
It's ridiculous.
The company
has no revenue.
But do you think it could ever be a bigger business? Do you think if he wins the presidency, it becomes...
Why would it be bigger? Look, he's only interesting now because he's out there entertaining the folks. I hope if he does get elected, he just plays golf for 4 years.
I got to watch more business news. That was fun. That was Barry Diller on CNBC slamming the media company that owns Truth Social. And in response to those questions, he's like, no, why? Come on. And I'm him, man. I've never been more a person speaking on CNBC. Yeah, Truth Social doesn't make any money. It loses tons of money. You could arguably launch a competing social media company just with the money it lost in 2023. But Barry Diller there is not looking at it from the point of view of a MAGA person, but just as an investor. Is this a thing that we have any reason to believe will be worth more money than it is now, or even as much money as it's worth now? And he doesn't think so, but he wants to respond to some of the people who are getting involved in investing in this. Take a look at that.
So do you think that all of the investors in this are getting scammed? Do you think they think this is a transference of wealth from one side to the other and that's the goal? What do you think is happening?
I think they're dopes. I mean, who would buy a company that literally has, what does it have? $30 of revenue? How could you put a value on it? They're buying it for other reasons, just like they bought theaters when there was no theater business, or they bought GameStop or whatever. It's stupid. It's stupid stuff.
It was 1,000 times revenue, I think. Was it four million?
$4 million in revenue. That's $4 million in revenue. It's ridiculous. I'm not saying it's not
four million.
Why are you even talking about this? It's a scam, just like everything he's ever been involved in is some sort of con.
Let me pivot.
Amazing survival of a con man is just beyond comprehension.
I don't know Barry Diller. I don't know anything about him, but he's so done with that conversation. And he's also right. Like the guy jumping in with the $4 million, like, yeah, that's good for like a random bakery or something. This is an international social media site that made $4 million and lost $58 million. That doesn't make it a good investment. And sure, people can pump the stock price during the IPO for a lot of reasons. As was brought up there, there are ways in the short term to make money, both on the rise and on the fall. That doesn't mean that a serious investor should invest in this thinking that it will organically grow in value due to increasing profits. It just won't. And by the way, before we comment, the stock price they were talking about there didn't look good. It had already dropped a lot. But I've been tracking it throughout the morning, and at least as of when I took this screenshot, it was down even more. it's still dropping. It will continue to, because while its initial price after the first day of public trading had no relationship to any inherent value that it had, neither does this. It ain't worth $42 a share either, any more than it's worth 80. It isn't worth a dollar a share. It isn't worth anything. And Donald Trump is going to respond to this, but I really hope that people, desperate people, aren't investing in this thinking that Donald Trump is going to save them or something. What do you think, Brett?
Barry Diller is the founder of Fox Broadcasting Company and USA Networks.
So what does he know?
He knows $4 billion worth of personal worth. Worth of media, and now he runs an internet services company. Barry Diller. So the thing he's talking about is this thing called EBITDA, which is earnings before, you know, interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. So there's and basically you find out all your earnings before you even do any taxes. And the way that you value a company typically is you have this thing called an industry multiple, where you take all your earnings and you say, what industry are you in? And then they give you this coefficient to multiply it by. And you know, at the height of the dot-com boom, it was 65. So you take all of you, and it got as low as 35, and some people have it now at like 5. So anywhere between taking how much you earn and multiply it by the industry multiple, anywhere by times 5 or by 65, none of that is the 1,000.
Yeah.
That Barry Diller was talking about. They take its earnings. They should, to find out how much it's worth, they should multiply it by anywhere between 5 and 60. But no, they are multiplying it by 1,000. That is proof that it's insane. But that is how all these companies work. The idea that it is so difficult to create a social media platform that anybody uses, and there's so much speculation. Now, when you add the stock value to it, once it's already out there on the market, it opens up such a huge possibility for this to get futzed with in ways that we are absolutely seeing right now.
Yeah.
And you get the to the moon speculators who are doing it because it's a hot, you know, it's, but there's this thing called buy the rumor, sell the news. Right now, it's the news. And everybody's kind of pointing at how this is so overvalued. The news is going to drive the stock price down, like you're saying right now.
Which, yeah, I would argue that we have been seeing that. And thank you for that analysis. I understood 10 to 12% of it. It sounded smart. It sounded very
it's John's
smart.
Biggest pet peeve about like capital that shows up and gets dumped on a company and then they hire morons.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of Silicon Valley and that seemed similar to some of that.
It's exactly that.
But anyway, so look. The news comes out, the stock price is going down. I delight in that. Not everybody does. And I think you can probably think of one person who's not happy about it. Donald Trump does not want you to panic over the falling stock price of Trump Media. And he tried to reassure people by spinning a fantasy that everything is going to be okay because everybody loves Truth Social. He said on Truth Social, all of the competitors to Truth, especially those in the radical left Democrats party who are failing at every level, like to use their vaunted disinformation machine to try and convince people, and it's not easy to do, that Truth is not such a big deal and doesn't get the word out, as well as various others, which they know to be false. I think Truth is amazing. First of all, it's very solid having over $200 million in cash and zero debt. I'm going to pause there for a second because I don't know if that's true. He constantly says that him and the Trump organization has tons of cash and no debt, and that's never been true. So I don't know why we just trust that about this. But again, okay, you have cash from the people who launched it, but you don't have earnings. So you have cash and that can go down over time, but that's not a strong business position to be in. But anyway, more importantly, it is the primary way I get the word out. And for better or worse, people want to hear what I have to say. Perhaps according to experts more than anyone else in the world, my TV ratings are by far the highest and my rallies are not equaled. Look, I had hundreds of millions of followers on various platforms and could have had them back again, but was canceled for largely political reasons. Something about a coup or something like that. Those platforms all want me back. They need me back. And anyway, I'm going to skip ahead though, because he goes on to say that everybody seems to get whatever I have to say and quickly. So everybody's on Truth because they see my message, which is not true. People pick it up and then they talk about it elsewhere. That doesn't mean they're on Truth Social and seeing the ads. But he says at press conferences, I will sometimes ask, who is on Truth? I have never had one reporter tell me they are not. They are all on Truth because they have to be. No, they're not. They're not. Not every reporter is on True. I literally don't have a True Social account. I don't think many people do. And I'm not going to go and analyze all the different reporters for all these different places, but I do want to contextualize the claim that everyone is on Truth. And I'm going to say not everyone is on Truth. Not even all the MAGA people on Truth. You know how bad it is? Only 5 GOP senators are on True Social. And when I saw that, I was legitimately shocked. Because they should at least be on there. That's where the MAGA people are, at least the MAGA bots. But they're not. Mitch McConnell's not on there. That's not particularly surprising. John Thune, no. No Tim Cotton. Ted Cruz isn't even on it. No Lindsey Graham. No Josh Hawley. He participated in the coup. And he's not even on there. In fact, the only people who are on there are these. You got Marsha Blackburn, Katie Britt. She's desperately looking for any friend she can get right now. Chuck Grassley, who I'm sure knows that he's on True Social. He definitely signed up for it and uses it. James Lankford, who looks surprised in that picture to find out he's on there. And Tommy Tuberville himself. So 5 of 49, I don't think everybody's on True Social. I think, in fact, very few people are on True Social. But will this be enough to stabilize the stock price, Brett?
No. So the only real value I can see in a long-term, you know, play for True Social is if it becomes the case that social media, the entire social media industry becomes wildly partisan and you have your platform only based on your political views, then suddenly it's the only ones that are valuable are the ones that capture an entire political movement. That's the only way. But there is no way that even in that scenario, basically, if you're dividing up the pie more, then each piece becomes less valuable anyway. So the ceiling for these companies is lower because they can never represent everybody the way Facebook could represent everybody. So it's just a bad play.
Yeah, they're trying to really.
And it's all this perceived value. It's the perceived value that Twitter had, right? Twitter isn't for a long, if you look at the usage numbers, Twitter was never a place where everybody was. It still isn't, no matter how much Elon Musk futzes with the organic traffic numbers. But it was never a place where everybody was. It was a place where the news media went because it was easy to find quotes that they could put in articles and then make that coverage seem like it told the story of everyone when it never was. Neither was any newspaper. There's a saying in journalism that's 1-2 trend. You just find 3 people that say the same thing. Now you can write your article. Mm-hmm. Twitter was a place that made that low bar even lower. And True Social is basically one, you know, a barnacle on the underside of the social media whale that kind of makes that easy when you're writing articles about crazy MAGA people.
Yeah, look, it doesn't make sense now. I don't think it made sense to do. There had already been multiple attempts to create a right-wing, you know, bubble like that, and they didn't work. And Twitter wasn't making money. So why would a smaller, more niche version of it make money? Like, you're not going to replace Twitter at that point. It's just too difficult. They have the critical mass. What they could have potentially done is he should have done Trump TV. That's what he should have done. Because like they kind of killed Fox News briefly following the 2020 election. That's at least conceivable. It's more conceivable than killing Twitter and being profitable. They should have gone in that direction. And maybe they will. Maybe that's how they can make some money. But it's not going to be off of True Social. The civil war between Marjorie Greene and House Speaker Mike Johnson continues, and it continues to be weirdly one-sided. Mike Johnson has repeatedly made like fawning diplomatic overtures to Marjorie Greene, trying to bridge the gap between these different segments of the House Republicans, only to be punched in the face every single time. And we have another example of that. So yesterday on the show, we talked about the fact that she is now just claiming that he's being blackmailed. That's why he's doing, you know, like bipartisan stuff is because he's being blackmailed. Tucker Carlson agrees. And even though she's making these insane conspiratorial claims against him, and then you have Tucker Carlson making weird claims about his personal life and stuff, he's still trying to be besties with her. He said, "I respect Marjorie. She will always have an open door to the speaker's office. We do have honest differences on strategy sometimes, but share the same conservative beliefs. In spite of a Republican majority of just a single seat in just one chamber of Congress, we are still fighting this administration every day to make policy changes. A shutdown would not serve our party or assist us in our mission of saving the Republic by growing our majority, nor will another motion to vacate." Which is such a diplomatic, again, way to say several things that he needs her to understand, and that he has, the only chance he has of her understanding it is to be very nice about it. So we only have a one seat margin, you doink. We can't do the crazy stuff you want because it just won't work. We don't have the margin for it. And a shutdown would hurt us in an election year and maybe lead to us losing the majority. Vacating the speakership will again hurt us in election year and maybe lead to us losing the speakership. How do you not understand this? But the issue, and I respect the diplomacy, that's the sort of quality you kind of need to have to be an effective speaker, I guess, is that you try to bring people together, is she's not going to get any of this. She's not going to learn any lessons for two reasons. She's stupid and she's awful. Either one of those would doom this thing, and she's got both of them, Mike Johnson. So just save the effort. You're looking pathetic. What do you think, Brett?
I love the characters in this. It's like a psychotic badger in Marjorie Taylor Greene and a Bible salesman who's never sold any Bibles in Mike Johnson. It's the world's most boring human versus the world's most toxic human. Yeah. And they're going head to head. And he's like, "I'm definitely smarter than the toxic human. I'm going to say it boringly. I don't know who can get through to this lady, but someone may be able to. The most I can do in this scenario is to just, the guy's a punching bag. He's just going to take a bunch of punches. And if you want to watch, I found, just incidentally, to promote a video I did on Rebel HQ this week, I'm putting the links in the chat and everything. I found an old video of Jon Stewart absolutely eviscerating Mike Johnson in a hearing about 9/11 victims.
I didn't see that.
It is thoroughly amazing. So watch that. And then, it came out Monday and it's fantastic. You'll see, Jon Stewart just eviscerate a bunch of Republicans, but starting with the future Speaker of the House at the time.
That's awesome. Everyone definitely go head over to Rebel HQ and see that. It's also in the Twitch chat right now. That is awesome. I'm going to close with this. So she says that he's being blackmailed, that he is corrupt, that he's the same as Nancy Pelosi. That's what she said. And he responds with, "I still think we're great and we text each other and blah, 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 blah." And then she responds to that by saying that if he moves ahead with an aid package for Ukraine, it would be one of the most egregious things he could do, and that she was not backing off at all over her threat to oust him. "I'm not saying I have a red line or a trigger, and I'm not saying I don't have a red line or a trigger. And I think that's just where I'm at right now, but I'm going to tell you right now, funding Ukraine is probably one of the most egregious things that he can do." And theoretically, she should try to boot him from the position, which could fail or work or lead to Hakeem Jeffries becoming speaker. We live in wild times and she's one of the wilder aspects of it. In any event, we need to take another break, but we're going to be closing out the hour on the other side with Roseanne Barr, Carrie Lake, and Sean Hannity once again kowtowing to his audience. All that and more after this. It's a really fast social break. Yes, so Jordan has stolen most of my best gaming friends.
It's crazy.
They now play games without me quite frequently now. But it's totally cool. I don't mind. I like bringing people together and then being.
It's my favorite fact of the millennium. Yeah, anyway. Jordan's like, "Is Terrence available? Can I?"
But anyway, we should squad up. Okay, we should do that. Anyway, your wife says you were doing Rebel HQ. You couldn't have played anyway.
It's true.
Okay, with that said, we've got two awesome stories. We have to get to both. So whenever we're ready, we need everybody to buckle up for whatever this is.
Hey, old bro. How are you doing? I'm here at Mar-a-Lago supporting Carrie Lake. And it was a fantastic evening. And our Trump is here being the DJ. And I've just danced and everyone's amazed.
Woof. In any event, that's Roseanne Barr having fun as you do at a Carrie Lake fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago. And Our Trump was there, which was great. He was the DJ. I would love to hear what songs he picked. But in any event, there is a wild twist to this story. So she's sort of keeping it together for Roseanne, but there's a crazy twist to the story. We'll get to that in one sec. But first, I want to give you a little bit more of where she goes from just being Roseanne to being like full caps Roseanne. Take a look at this.
So I'm just going to say to you, please drop out of college because it's going to ruin your lives. Do me a favor, drop out. They don't teach you nothing good. Email me or Twitter me or whatever you call me, and I'll help you with your life. But you've got to get out of college because it isn't nothing but devil worshiping, baby blood drinking Democrat donors. Love ya.
What really made that video was the final pan to Trump like that in the portrait. So basically, what is she talking about? You're like, you're trying to encourage people like support Carrie Lake, and you get off on how all the colleges are drinking baby blood. Stay on message, Roseanne. Come on, you got to switch over to coffee at some point. What do you think, Brett?
I like this, Roseanne, man. More of this, less of like Planet of the Apes. Like, do this. Do. Yes. Less, I thought the bitch was white, and more like, hey, drop out of college and let me do your hair. come to Annie funny. Rose house, and we'll order pizza and we'll watch Housewives, and we'll figure it out.
Like, it's so funny when you remember that this is one of the top, most undeniably successful stand-up comedians of all time. Roseanne Barr.
Super fast. Wait, yeah. I didn't really listen to her stand-up. I liked Roseanne, the show. Was her stand-up good?
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, good. Well, then she earned it then. But yeah, she's really something. But that should be the show. Whatever her Fox Nation show is, it should be that instead. But I want to give you just a little bit more of her being herself. She tweeted prior to that event, on my way to Mar-a-Lago to help support the great Carrie Lake, we must try to vote our way out of this for at least one last year. And then if that doesn't work, 1776. So that is her attachment to democracy. If it works for us just once, we can have a democracy. But if it doesn't, the blood starts flowing. And not just at Harvard, in the streets of Washington, D.C. But in any event, she eventually made it to that event. She was served quite a bit. It doesn't appear that she was that they stopped serving her like they reportedly did for Lauren Boebert at a different fundraiser. But here's the twist, okay? I previewed a twist. Because if you see that and you think that like she's a celebrity guest or whatever, and like, oh my God, she's falling apart, then poor Carrie Lake. No, not poor Carrie Lake. She ain't poor. She raised $1 million at that event at Mar-a-Lago, which is a lot of money. That is not, it looks not enough to run a whole Senate campaign for, but at one event, $1 million. I mean, sure, you're gonna have to pay off the bill for however much Pinot Grigio they pumped into Roseanne, but even after that, you're still gonna have like $750,000. That's a lot of money. And so we'll get to the other numbers here, but what do you make of that?
So none of the people in this movement care about their voters at all. This is what it's for. It's to raise the money, and they'll say and do whatever is necessary for you to give, for folks to show up and give them cash. Either the rich people giving her cash at these fundraisers because they want to be in an in crowd and have access to the things that actually affect the rich people. That's where it breaks down. Like on a fundamental level, if I can get Carrie Lake, Roseanne Barr, Donald Trump to do what I want as just some random schmo in this, you know, somewhere between the Pacific and the Atlantic and north of Mexico, south of Canada, like that's great. That's kind of how it's perverted. It's a perverted version of that. It's a ridiculous version of that. But that's more what people want than what typically they perceive to happen in Washington. Washington, they're like, people don't listen to me. But what's sad is like, what's motivating Roseanne Barr is not her political leanings at all. It's the fact that she is an exaggerated version of Bill Maher and Dave Chappelle and everybody. Like, she was kind of canceled by a group that once undeniably loved her. And she's just so mad. She'll just toss this like, yeah, there's unicorn blood. I don't think she believes that. I think she's just trying to fight fire with fire as she perceives fire to have taken her down.
Maybe. It's always, it's hard to say who's a true believer and who's just grifting. She To me, she reads as a little bit more authentic in some of these beliefs than some of the others. But it can still be the same causal mechanism that you identified. She was rejected by a group that had liked her for a very long time. So she ran into the arms of those who would accept her. And along the way, she's radicalized and she starts to trust these people. And that's a really bad idea because they believe utterly insane things. That's more of my read, but I guess we disagree there.
I think that comedians will actually get us out of this horrible situation we're in of partisanship and extremism and stupidity, threatening the general normal people within a group because it's so easy to pick them out. And I think comedians need to be empowered to neutralize that stuff, and you need to not get too mad at comedians along the way. That said, you have comedians that are, you know, Roseanne Barr epitomizes them, who are no longer comedians. Now they're just bitter.
Yeah.
And that's not motivating them the way that like a hunt for truth and hilarity is what motivates a typical comedian.
Yeah, there's a lot of bitterness to go around. In any event, we are running very low on time. So whenever we're ready, why don't we jump into one more topic to close out this hour?
Is there a bird flu pandemic in the future? The EU is warning of its potential spread to humans. Dr. McCary, please tell me that we're not going to deal with that show.
So that is Sean Hannity risking disaster with his audience by acknowledging the fact that a pandemic could be coming to our shores in the form of a bird flu. And I get why he's doing it. You know, you want to keep your audience terrified. But the thing about talking about a pandemic and talking about it with a doctor is he may actually advocate for doing something about it, maybe something medicinal. And that, of course, can't be allowed. But I'm going to let the doctor say it. Let's move on with a little bit more of the video.
The chances of it turning into a pandemic are low with this particular strain in the form that it's in. Now, I don't think it's helpful to tell the world we're worried, we're concerned, we're worried. I think what's helpful is to actually support the researchers that have developed a universal flu vaccine that would encompass H5N1, this particular virus, but they are not getting the support they need. That's what people need. When you hear these citations of a 50 and 65% mortality rate.
I think people watching and hearing about a potential vaccine, You probably just pissed off half my audience at least. The idea that we'd go through that hell over and over again. But if that's what you believe.
It's a traditional vaccine. It's not an mRNA vaccine in development, FYI.
All right, that's helpful.
Yeah, but is it though, Marty Makary? It's a traditional vaccine. Oh, they'll be very nuanced in their anti-vax thought over there on Fox News. It's just an expansion of the flu vaccine. Flu vaccine wasn't controversial for years and years and years until it got caught in the conspiratorial crossfire of the reaction to COVID. That's all it is. He's like, Sean Hannity is kind of joking a little bit, like he's like, oh, warning. But he's also right. Yeah, no, the Dr. Makary probably PO'd half of his audience because he acknowledged that, yes, this thing probably won't be a pandemic. But one of the reasons it won't be a pandemic is that we have vaccines to fix it. And it's just such a weird position, Brett, where they want to talk about how there's all this scary stuff out there that might come to our shores. But they also don't want us to do any of the relatively simple things we can do to not be killed by it. They want to feel threatened. Right. And they don't want to be saved from that. They want the strong man to say he's going to save them, but they don't want to take the medicine that will actually save them. What do you think?
They want to feel threatened because it makes them feel alive. And they want to feel smarter than the person who has a solution to that threat because they want to feel superior.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. That's how television works. And that's how I always tell everybody, take into account what role this discourse plays in the lives of the people you're talking about. And it's just so they can go like, yeah, I'm better than them. Oh God, I'm scared, but I'm better. And that's it. Yeah. And basically, you know, the way that the flu vaccine works is they pick the most common flus that might affect you. And then they put like normal antibody building, weaker strains of the virus in there and they inject you with it. And it's always the reason like, how did I still get the flu? Well, you probably just got a less common strain of the flu that year. Sure.
And that's Bill Gates that does that?
No, I don't.
Anyway,
think so.
Yeah, no, I like your read of the way the fear works. Like, you know, there's that stereotypical thing that people say that like sometimes in, you know, the stereotypical straight relationships, like a woman might express like a problem. And stereotypically, at least, the man just provides a solution when all that she wants is to talk about it. and how she feels. It's kind of the same thing. They want to feel threatened. They don't want to be saved by the vaccine there.
Yeah, I agree. Women are irrational. That's your point, right?
That's not what I'm... No, I don't think that that's an irrational position to want to discuss and work. How dare you? You're going to make me end up in Mar-a-Lago chugging...
Shiraz. By the way, the live TV version of the show ended before you could tell me I was stupid. So I win in many ways.
He always wins. Anyway, we're going to take a short break at the close of this hour. Thank you, everyone listening on the podcast. There's a lot more to come in the aftermath, including our Garbage People of the Week. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.